Hey, it's Jim Browdy. I am Marjorie Egan. You're listening to hour number two of Boston Public Radio, 89.7 WGBH. Hello, Jim.
Hey there, Marjorie. And joining us, as he does every month, he actually was here a couple of minutes ago to take our questions, more importantly yours, is Mayor Marty Walsh. Mr. Mayor, good to see you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me today.
And
Hi.
The phone number,
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
It's 877-301-8970, 877-301-8970. You can go to our Facebook page, as a ton of you are. Or you can email the mayor at BPR, as in Boston Public Radio, BPR at WGBH.org. Sorry, Marjorie.
No problem. No, I wanted you to have a chance to give out the phone number. Very, very important, because how could people call? Anyway, Mr. Mayor, big event last night where the president issued his executive order, going to help a lot of people not be deported, also ending secure communities, which has been a cops pulling over people, asking them their immigration status. What do you think?
I mean, I think the president had to act last night. You know, the inaction of the United States Senate and the United States Congress to come up with some legislation around immigration reform forced him to act. And I think as the President of the United States of America, whether he's a Democrat or Republican, if you have a Congress that's not moving anything out positively for the country, you have to take action. And he had to take action yesterday. And I know that some people are upset with my comments today. But to be quite honest with you, we have to deal with the issue of immigration reform in the country. I watched right after the election night. Generally, when you see a change in leadership in the House or the Senate, usually the leader, whether they're Democrat or Republican, says that they're going to work with the other party and try and move the agenda of the country forward. Mitch McConnell stood up there and said, "We're not going to move anything forward for President Obama." That's not how you advance the country. These people have an obligation. They get elected to serve the people of their district and their state, and they're reacting like that. They're crippling the country, and they should stop playing politics on it. They should stop moving legislation forward. And one of those legislation is immigration. It's a controversial issue. It's something that most people don't want to deal with, don't want to talk about. I would much rather talk about something that we're going to talk about later on. But the fact that the president acted last night, we need immigration reform. One other thing, I'll take one step further. In being mayor now for 11 months, you know, we also are looking at companies who want to bring in people from other countries to work in this country who have the ability and skill to train our people how to work. We can't bring them in. Why? Because we don't have comprehensive immigration reform. We're limited to a one-year time frame when it should be more than that. The Congress and the Senate in Washington needs to start realizing why they're there and act the way they're supposed to. And McConnell and Boehner need to smarten up and move this country agenda forward and stop playing politics.
Where are you getting? You said, Mr. Mayor, you're getting criticism on your position. Who's criticizing?
Well, people are just, the immigrant issue is such a hot issue that everyone looks at, and they, they hear the stories about the border, people coming over the borders, and we seem to forget the 1980s when Ronald Reagan was the President of the United States of America, when the borders were opened up and people coming in here in the thousands. People forgot when George Bush was the president, they opened up the border and people coming in here by the thousands and in the millions. There was no conversation. And all of a sudden, this president has to wear everything that happens in the past. And really, it's frustrating at some point because, and again, it's not about Democrats or Republicans, although this particular issue is. I think that if either party shouldn't be stifling the growth of the country and the progress of the country. In Massachusetts, here in Boston, we've had in the past, when I got elected to the legislature, Bill Weld was the governor. He made some moves that were positive. People liked it, and he had a Democratic legislature, Republican governor, move forward. Paul Cellucci, same thing. Jane Swift, the same thing. We'll jump over the Romney years for a minute. Go to Deval Patrick. Same thing, a little different with Paul Patrick, both sides. But we still move agendas forward. We have disagreements. That's okay. Disagreements are fine. Different political stance and philosophies are okay. But at this, what's happening in this country, when I turn on the radio, TV, whatever national news it is, they talk about how bad it is. Well, our country isn't as in bad shape as people is. When President Obama came in as president, the stock market was at 7,000 points. It's at 17,000 today. When Obama came in, the unemployment rate was 10%. It's 5 to 6% today. I mean, the country isn't as bad as everyone thinks it is. let's stop playing politics in Washington and start doing what you get elected to, represent the people you serve.
Our number is 877-301, 8970, if in a few minutes you want to speak directly to the mayor of Boston.
Now, Mr. Mayor, I know that immigration is an important issue. People's tempers get up and they get very emotional about it. But I'm not sure that that compares to the emotion people feel in Boston about saving parking spaces during the winter. We have a Facebook question from Jeff.
Oh, God.
Who wants to know, what is the policy for parking space savers this winter? Lawn chairs, cones, toilets, empty sinks, etc. Will the policy be enforced equally in all neighborhoods? I've seen flyers indicating the South End is a no space saver area, but have not seen similar notices in other neighborhoods. What's the scoop on the space savers?
We're not going to have any snow this year. So we're not going to have to worry about that. This is not Buffalo.
Yeah.
Well, the South End is actually doing a pilot program this year, which is interesting. No space savers at all in the South End. It was the community residents that got together and discussed it. And they're launching their own pilot program, which I commend them for. And it'll be interesting to see how it works out. I'm going to keep a very close eye on that. But the space saver policy is going to be the same as last year. After a major storm, if somebody shovels out their spot for a couple of days after the storm, you'll be able to save your space. I would suggest you don't put out furniture and don't put out sinks and toilets and all the other stuff. A cone might work or something like that, a barrel. But, we're going to take it storm by storm basis, certainly a situation like what happened in Baltimore and in Buffalo, you're talking about lots of snow. I mean, it's going to be a while before people can drive there. But again, you have to be courteous of your residents, courteous of your neighbors. And that's where I think people get all bent out of shape on it. You know, some people will shovel out spaces and then that day somebody will come in and park the car there.
That ever happened to you?
Yes, it will pack. Yeah, well, I grew up where I grew up on Taft Street. We were all three deckers, and it's frustrating. You shovel, you spend a lot of time, a couple hours shoveling. Next thing you come home, somebody's parked in your spot. But if you do that, when you leave, put the space saver back in the spot. I think there's a way of doing it. There's a lot of different philosophies in Boston. We have the people who were born here who shovel spaces, and they feel it's their space till April. And then you have people that moved in here that take public transportation to work and park their car on a Sunday and don't move it till the following Saturday. So that's a whole different philosophy. And then it changes, really varies by neighborhood But I think what's happening in the South End is going to be interesting to watch to see how it works out. And I'm hoping it's successful so we can
move on.
Just one last thing before we get to the calls, Mr. Mayor, at least for now. This Ferguson, I guess it's in Clayton, Missouri, the grand jury that's looking into whether or not to indict the police officer Darren Wilson for the shooting and killing of Michael Brown apparently is going to come out with a decision imminently. Some say later this afternoon, maybe this weekend. Commissioner Evans has spoken a lot about, and you have too, about the city's preparations, what you're going to do, what you're not going to do. What are you doing? What exactly are the plans here, assuming there is no indictment?
Well, we've been preparing for this for a long time. The commissioner and myself have met with community leaders. We've met with residents. We've spoken to other elected officials. Last night, Dini Mulhern from the Director of the Public Safety Initiative had a meeting with about 100 young people at the St. Peter's Teen Center on Bowdoin Street. We've been constantly preparing for whatever the grand jury does here in the city of Boston. We've had two protests since the shooting in Ferguson here in the city that have been peaceful, uneventful in the sense of no rabble-rousing, no problems. People have been able to express themselves in a free manner and be very happy about it. We're anticipating that there'll be, depending on what they do, but let's assume there's some type of demonstration. We don't anticipate to be any different than the first two. We're asking people to be very, respectful of one another, respectful of the city of Boston. If there is a protest, there was some conversation about some cities and towns, preparing with bringing in, I know the National Guard's coming into Missouri and other folks, but we're not looking at that here in Boston. We're not looking, the commissioner was quoted in the paper today of not wearing, all of the
military
stuff. We're not going to do that. We've done a lot of work, a lot of groundwork here, and hopefully that whatever the ruling is of the findings are here, we'll have a peaceful protest.
What do you think? You mentioned very quickly, if you can, the National Guard thing called out by the governor there. It seems to me when you call it the National Guard in advance, and a state of emergency, you're basically saying, we know you're going to riot. We know you're going to cause damage. Was that a wise move by that governor?
It's hard to say. I'm not on the ground there, and I was asked that question last night, and I'm not on the ground, so it's hard to say that, but I think you are right. When you talk about bringing in the National Guard for crowd control, something like a demonstration, you're anticipating problems. And I think in some cases that might even get the crowd more excited to see that there are people dressed in fatigues and having weapons with them. Again, I think I'm, you know, Commissioner Evans and Chief Gross and the entire Boston Police Department are very aware of what's happening here, and we're working hard, and we're hoping that if something, you know, if the grand jury comes down without an indictment, that, you know, we will have, if there's protests, peaceful protests here in the city of Boston.
Let's take some calls. Mr. Mayor, Marty sure. Walsh is going to take your calls. 877-301-8970. Take it away.
Let's go to Lynn in the South Shore.
Hi, Lynn.
Hello?
Hi.
Hi, how you doing today, Mr. Mayor?
Good, Lynn. How are you?
Good. I made a visit to City Hall on Wednesday. We had a little rally there to support all the folks who have been displaced, and I want you to know that it was not in any way, shape, or form out to bash you. I completely understand your decision. It's just that, and I'm not here to question you or your anything. I just was hoping that I could have a meeting with you or the people, or you could issue a press release to know what's going on. There's so many people all over Massachusetts that desperately want an answer. What is the answer? We're not getting it through the media. We're not getting it through your office. I've called. I've been asking. There's so many missed messages and so many groups of people, as you know, that were out there, the homeless community.
Yeah. We should explain what she's talking about, Mr. Mayor, because many people may not know. We're talking about the shelter out on
the
Long
Island. The shelter is plural. Lynn, let me just start by telling you this. One is the programs on Long Island, I have been a supporter my entire career as an elected official. Many of those programs on the island receive funding from the state, and I was the person that would advocate to get the funding on the island. So I am very well aware of the need and sensitivity of the programs on the island. Those of you that are listening that might not understand what I'm talking about Long Island in the Boston Harbor, that we had a homeless shelter and 12 other programs out there where we had to shut the bridge down leading out to the island in October because of the structure of the bridge and concern about the bridge being crumbling into the ocean, honestly. When we made that call, we had some plans in place, tentative plans in place for a short-term solution. We are working right now on long-term plan solutions, fixing of being able to relocate all the programs on the island that were on the island, including our homeless shelter. We're going to have a meeting on December 2nd at City Hall. So I'd suggest if you call 635-4500, the main number, and ask for the Office of Neighborhood Services. We'll be able to get you the actually, hold on. I'm getting the details right now. I'm wrong. Let me just correct this. December 2nd, there's a meeting in Mattapan at 6 o'clock, and December 4th in Roxbury at 6 o'clock. So if you call 4500, 635-4500 in City Hall, ask for the Office of Neighborhood Services, they'll be able to tell any provider or anybody that's listening, they'll be able to tell you the details of the meeting. But it's certainly a top priority of mine, and I'm hoping to, in the next week or so to be able to announce some good announceables here for some real strong concrete solutions on what we're going to do long term.
Thank you, Lynn, for the call.
You know, just one quick follow-up on it. Ann Mostow, our fellow reporter here at WGBH, and Emily Rooney have both interviewed people affected by this whole shutdown of these shelters. And one of the things I don't understand is lots of people are complaining that they have not yet been able to get back out to the shelter to get their belongings. I don't understand why they can't just take a boat over there and get the belongings.
We're getting their belongings off. We've begun that process.
Okay.
A lot of the belongings at the shelter, the homeless shelter, they're at Woods Mullen right now. There's a code that everyone has. They know what their code is, their locker code. We're putting them in containers, then we're bringing them over to Woods Mullen. And anyone who goes into Woods Mullen and requests, we can get it to them probably within 24 hours. A lot of people haven't responded on that as well, but we're moving everything off the island. What we had to do was barge everything off the island. And about a week and a half ago, one of the light poles on the bridge came crashing down. So this bridge is a situation where probably should have been addressed a long time ago. We began to address it this year in the beginning of the year. I work with the governor, and we're able to work with the Secretary of Transportation. We're able to get some money along with the city to put out an RFP for rebuilding a new bridge. That was in the works. It just happened that we had to shut the bridge down October 8th. The RFP was going out October 30th. So there is an RFP out there to rebuild the bridge. But in the short term, we're talking 2 or 3 years. We are going to come up with very strong solutions on where do we place 11 of these programs, and where do we place the homeless shelter? You know, obviously it's very difficult because there's siting issues in neighborhoods. There's issues around building up infrastructure and building up facilities that are able to be handicap accessible, as well as the facilities that people had, for example, in the homeless shelter. We need to provide showers. We need to provide safe living arrangements. We need to be handicap accessible. And there's not a lot of places that you can, you know, overnight say, okay, 700
right.
Bed shelter.
Well, that's one. I don't want to spend too much time on this, but one of the things I understand is, in the meantime, there are people with no place to go. So I don't understand why they couldn't have just stayed there.
We have shelters. We have shelters up in the city.
There's a lot of people that are saying that they live
There's shelters there. There's shelters in the city of Boston. We're able to house the same amount of people right now in different places that we have. I mean, I know there's been a lot of speculation, and we had a meeting, and a lot of the advocates came out, and unfortunately, I feel wrongfully demonized the city and myself in a lot of ways, because those same folks that were out in the community rabble-rousing were the same folks that were in my office at the State House whenever there was a cut, whenever there was a tax increase, whenever there was something they were looking for their money. I mean, I know these programs very well.
So there are beds, is the bottom line.
Yeah, and I know the services they deliver. The one area that we do have to do a lot better job on is the detox program, and we're looking right now to come up with a very solid solution.
Mr. Mayor, thank you. Lynn, thank you for your call. Mr. Mayor, back to the phones.
Paul Amabro.
Hi, Paul. Whoops, got to turn the radio down there, Paul. Let's put Paul on hold. We'll get back to him in a second. The number is 877-301-8970. I didn't know we had to say this. Please turn your radio down when you get in queue or off or that sort of thing. Where are we going next, Mr. Mayor?
How about Hanny in West Roxbury?
Hi, Hanny.
It's Annie.
Oh, sorry. Hi, Annie.
West Roxbury. That's all right. I was just wondering if the mayor can readdress the acceptable levels of the quarry blasts here in West Roxbury that happen every single week.
Yeah, I necessarily can't address at this moment the acceptable levels of quarry blasts, but I know, Annie, I don't know if you were you at the meeting at the Elks Hall about a month ago?
No, I was out of the country.
Okay, we had a meeting there to talk about the quarry, and this is a quarry in West Roxbury that has been, I think, since the 1800s, it's been a quarry. There's been blasting going on in this quarry. A lot of the residents in the community, their houses shake, the neighborhood shakes when they do the blasting. They have the legal right to blast for the next 70 years in the quarry, and there's been some discussion of using the quarry as a place to fill it with construction debris and material, which has kind of brought the issue of the quarry to a head in West Roxbury. We had a community meeting about 3 or 4 weeks ago, a month ago, where all the elected officials, local electeds, including myself, Congressman Lynch, were there to talk about how we're going to proceed and move forward with the quarry as far as being it allowed to be filled with construction debris in the blasting. They have every right, as you know, I think you know, Annie, they have every right to continue to blast for the next 70 years. We're working on trying to come up with some resolutions on how we can come to, there could be an end date somewhere in the future. There's a committee being put together now. Annie, I'd suggest you call Chris Rusk in my office, the mayor's office, and just get up to speed on where we are with this so we can move forward.
Okay. Annie, thanks for the call. Please make that call. You know, I wouldn't have thought of this until you mentioned Congressman Lynch's name, which reminded me of St. Patrick's Day, which reminded me of the fact that gay and lesbian veterans were allowed to march openly in the Veterans Day Parade with absolutely no fallout in a negative way.
We didn't have one problem.
Does that give you any sense of hope for inclusion on St. Patrick's Day next year?
I'm hopeful. You know, we were very close last year in the parade. It came down to a banner and putting the letters LGBTQ on the banner. That's what the end of the day was. I'm hopeful that we can put this behind us. You know, the ban on gays in the parade in New York is over now. You know, New York finally said, okay, this is enough. We've had enough. Hopefully we can do the same in Boston and move forward. I mean, this is, as I said last year in St. Patrick's Day and heading into 2015, the fact that we're having this discussion about a parade and who can march in a parade is ridiculous.
Our number is 877-301-8970. You can speak directly to the mayor of Boston, who spends an hour a month with us.
Go ahead, Mr. Mayor, take a call.
How about, is it Gabber? Gabber?
Hi. How do you say your name?
It's Gabor.
Gabor.
Oh, Gabor. How are you, Gabor?
Hi, Gabor.
I'm very well. Thank you for taking my call. I came to Boston 41 years ago, and presently I drive for a limo company. And quite often we take around investment bankers and so forth, spend a lot of money in Boston, obviously. And I just wanted to say that there is absolutely no place to wait for these people. We are not allowed to park in commercial zones. We are not allowed to park in taxi zones. Average driver makes about $11 an hour. Yesterday, I got a ticket in a taxi zone for $50. That's half a day's pay. This is a problem, I think, which is begging for some solution, maybe dual-use spaces, and there is no taxi there. There is no reason that you couldn't stop.
We get the question. Mr. Mayor.
Yeah, that's a tough issue, particularly with all the development that's going on in the city of Boston now, the lack of ability to park, the lack of places to park. I mean, it's certainly an issue even with some of our garages in downtown Boston are closing. Gabor, I would suggest you give City Hall a call, talk to the Transportation Department, and begin the conversation with Chief Galuli over there, and let's see if we can come up with some better solutions. I know that down the South Boston waterfront, there's the ability down there to be able to kind of hold over in certain areas. But when you're talking about downtown Boston, you're right. There's not a lot of places to go. The solution isn't a simple one. So I'd suggest you give the transportation a call, and we'll get working on it.
And by the way, Gabor, you hung up, but when you call the transportation department, seriously, you should mention you spoke to the mayor, and he's the one who suggested you make the call. The number's 877-301-8970. Mayor Marty Walsh is with us till 1 o'clock.
May I ask you a quick question? You've taken some flack in some corners for firing or laying off a bunch of city workers, people accusing you of cleaning house in a political kind of way. And I think most people understand that there's a new administration coming in and some people are going to be changing. But the one person I don't get, and maybe there are others, but the one person I've heard a lot about is Ellen Lipsey, won this big Shattuck Award. That's a public service award. I've been there for 27 years, headed up the Boston's Landmark Commission, planned to retire in a few months. She's in her late 50s. I'm not sure her health is that good either. You know, I mean, if she gets a big award as a public servant, and I know it's a new administration, but gee, couldn't she have resigned or something?
In some of the places, we're making changes with different boards and commissions in the city of Boston. We're going in different routes.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, you know, it's something that you don't want to do. It's something that, it's very uncomfortable doing, especially going from having a staff of 7 people to a staff of 18,000 people. But, you know, you have to make changes in government. And you know, in private sector, if this is a private sector, there's no conversation here.
Yeah.
You know, ironically... one of the papers that have been toughest on me, I mean, there's a change in ownership. People were let go. People were given severance packages.
Would that be?
The Boston Globe.
Okay.
I mean, and there were people laid off and severance packages there. And you know, it's not an easy thing. And it's not something I take pride in. The one thing I do take offense to is one of the columnists wrote, I believe today, you know, maybe a political donation would be something. That's not how I operate. And if they want to review the numbers, they can review the numbers. That's not how I operate. We have to make changes. And, you know, and unfortunately, there'll be more changes coming. I mean, I've made changes already this year, and there's going to be more changes coming to deliver better services to the people of Boston.
Do you get, you're a pretty calm guy in our limited experience with you. There's certain things that really aggravate you. The criticism on this is one of them, isn't it?
Not necessarily. That doesn't bother me much. I just think that, you know, people are making, there's obviously 8 people involved, concerned about the 8 people, but we're talking 8 out of 8, 17,000 people. And the constant going after it and looking for the political angle is what frustrates me. And I think, you know, the fact that people received awards, I commend them for receiving the awards, but unfortunately, things change. I mean, we have to make changes.
Did you know all the circumstances about these people, like including the ones that Marjorie mentioned when you made the decision?
Some of the folks that were given to me, I spoke to their superiors and we had a conversation about them.
But one last thing, and maybe the Globe is wrong about this, but what they said at the end of this story is that all the fired 8 employees, they're talking about a particular 5. I know there's more than this, but none donated to your campaign. They made an
issue. That doesn't matter to me. I don't hire people based on the fact if they donated to my campaign. There are people that are in my cabinet that didn't donate to my campaign. Yasha Franklin Hodge is a cabinet member, didn't donate to my campaign. Sheila Dillon is in my cabinet. I don't believe Sheila Dillon donated to my campaign. Ron Dorsey is in my cabinet. I don't believe Ron Dorsey donated to my campaign. Trying to think who else is there.
That's a good list.
Julie Barros, who is coming on in December 15th.
The arts person?
The arts person didn't donate to my campaign.
Yep.
How do you know if they didn't donate to your campaign?
Because I know they didn't donate. Maybe they did, but I don't care if they did or not. The question wasn't asked of me, will you donate to me? I'm not looking for a donation from them. I can raise money without having to worry about people donating to my campaign.
Oh, now, before we take a break, Mr. Mayor, we know a person who also did not donate to your campaign. You do want to come to town. That would be the Pope.
I do. Now, how do you know he didn't donate to me?
That's not what I heard.
Now,
he was a different name then.
Exactly. Snuck it right under the door.
He's a different name. Early on in your mayoralty, if that's a proper word, I think it is, you gave a letter to Sean O'Malley.
Sent a letter to the Pope and gave a letter to the Cardinal to bring over. But we sent the letter directly to the Pope asking him to consider Boston as a stop here.
Do you have any hope? I mean, he's doing Philadelphia, as we know, in 2050. Do you have any hope that Boston's going to be included in the list?
I'm not going to give up the hope. I mean, I certainly would love to see him come here. I know that he's, from what I read and hear, he's very close to the Cardinal. I'm not sure if any other city sent him a letter to invite him here. The Pope, would love to see the Pope come here. I mean, everywhere I go, you know, people who are Catholic who haven't been practicing in a while are so excited about this Pope. They're excited about what he means and what he stands for. I would love to see him come here to Boston.
You know, one last thing about this Pope. I don't understand. I just don't know. When people are in your position and you want something to happen, you think this is about to be a facetious question. It's not. So you give the letter to Sean O'Malley. Do you keep at it, meaning they're big-time Catholics who are major contributors, who are very powerful in the Catholic Church. Do you say to John Doe, by the way, next time you see Cardinal O'Malley, if you could just give him a little hint or remind him? Do you do? I'm serious about that.
I had dinner with the Cardinal probably about a month ago, and at the dinner, the conversation with the Pope came up, and certainly he expressed to me that he had told him verbally
he'd like
to see him come to Boston. And I'm going to stay on the Cardinal because I think that's our best conduit to getting the Pope here in Boston. And, you know, if the Pope comes, it would be great for the city, I think, great for so many people. I know when Pope John Paul came here, people were very excited.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
I was a kid in front of St. Margaret's Church when he went by. And would love to see the Pope come to Boston. I think that that'd be great if it happened. And if it didn't happen, I mean, obviously we're going to continue to move on. But the fact that he's so close to us, he's going to be – I think he's going to New York for a stop, and then Philly. So Boston, New York, Philly—that'd be a great, like the TV commercials.
We're with you.
We're talking to the mayor of Boston. He's going to be with us for another half hour. So take your call. We're taking your calls at 877-301-8970. Quick break. Right back.
Internet may be able to help you find the perfect burrito or let you vent about your dry cleaner, but it can't do everything.
The internet is not a public space. It is a private space that tolerates public speech.
The shortcomings of the newest medium. I'm Kara Miller, and that's coming up this week on Innovation Hub.
Saturday morning at 10, only on 89.7 WGBH.
Support for WGBH comes from you and the Massachusetts Teachers Association, reminding you that learning doesn't just happen in the classroom. It happens all day, every day. Working together, parents and teachers can make this a successful school year for every child in Massachusetts. And New England Conservatory, presenting Act 3 of Wagner's Die Walküre with soprano Jane Eaglin, bass baritone Greer Grimsley, and the NEC Philharmonia, December 10th in Jordan Hall, necmusic.edu/opera.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. I'm Jim Browdy. She is Marjorie Egan, and he, most importantly, is Mayor Marty Walsh. 11 months? 11 months.
I had in my 11th month, heading into 12 now.
Hey, you know, you told us if it's 11, it's going to be 12, right?
I'm heading, I'm heading.
Then 13 and then beyond that. Okay, fine.
Yeah, then we can start talking about being the new mayor.
Mr. Mayor, you were here in September. When you were here in September, we asked you about the one of the most important appointments you make. Yeah. I'm sure you'd agree, superintendent of the schools. You said by some point in January, we'll be able to make a selection of who will be the superintendent permanently. We're still on track for January?
Yeah, we are on track. When we kind of suspended the search for a little bit there and extended John McDonough for a year, the pool grew from 40 to 60. So we have 20 more candidates. I haven't seen a list of candidates yet because of allowing the search committee to do their thing. But from what I understand, very good, talented people in the pool, which is exciting for the city of Boston. The nominating committee set up a timeline. in December to do interviews and then to be able to get people the end of January here to me so I can make a recommendation or make a decision to send on to the school committee. So I'm very pleased where we are with it so far.
So you think you'll make a recommendation in January? That's your guess.
I'd love to, yeah. And you know, the one thing I will say to everyone is if I don't get the type of person I would like to see a superintendent of schools, I'm not going to choose somebody just for the sake of choosing them. And I'm not anticipating that. But I am, you know, from all the different people I've spoken to in the education world, saying make sure you're very comfortable with the person. Don't just choose somebody because of you think mm-hmm. you have to. So we're hopeful that we'll get a good, strong candidate. And you know, we're laying some groundwork now down. We have the Universal Pre-K Advisory Council working very diligently to come up with some recommendations on how we institute Universal Pre-K. We're looking at getting together our forming of our high school system going on right now. We have a study right now of our facilities, and so we're able to come back with some good, strong reports on where we are with facilities and how we upgrade them. So the new superintendent, we're doing a lot of groundwork so that person will be able to work and just continue to institute some of the things we'll want to do.
How much of a desire is that there be a person of color? We read the front page story in the Globe the other day about some disparities, particularly with young males of color, yeah. young boys oh, yeah, of yeah. color, and obviously there's some lag. Is that important in the consideration?
No, it's certainly important in the consideration. You know, we certainly want the best qualified candidate to come here to this city and be the superintendent of schools. And if we're able to look at somebody who is Latino, African American, certainly is important. And one of the main reasons is we have a system. 87% yeah. of the people are people of color in our kids in our system. So I think that's an important statement. But it's also the best qualified candidate. And I think the fact that the talent pool we have that have applied for the job is a very diverse talent pool, men, women of a lot of different backgrounds. That's a great thing to be able to choose from as we move forward.
Let's go to the calls. Mr. Mayor.
Sure. How about Grace in Hingham?
Hello, Grace.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call, Mayor Walsh. I have a quick question. I recently had to get my kids' passports, and I had to go into Boston to get their birth certificates.
Yep.
And I drove all the way into the city, and I parked. And
Wednesday, right?
Yes.
That's going to change.
Okay. Well, the only thing I wondered was I came home, and I'm like, I double-checked on the website, and it wasn't even listed on the website. And I just wanted to know, is that
this has
happening
been
in other departments?
No,
what happened? We don't know.
We in the city hall, we're in the process of changing this. I don't know, for whatever reason, this is the way it's always been. Wednesdays, you can't get a birth certificate.
Oh.
It's closed.
I did not know that.
Because of the recording of the information in the books.
What does that mean?
Okay.
Exactly. So, I've instructed birth certificate department to change this. We're in the process of changing it over. We will be a 5-day-a-week program. At some point, we're in the process of working it out because it's a staffing level issue now as well. What happens is when you get a birth certificate, everything's handwritten from what I understand, and you have to register it in. And I think that there's some sensitivity around keeping those records. And in the past, Wednesdays was the day that you would catch up on all of the records.
Oh, okay.
So we have to – it's a staffing issue. And again, it's about not giving the extra staff or, you know, one or two people in that department to beef it up more. And we have to change that.
Okay, Grace, there's your
answer. I apologize, Grace, for you.
Poor Grace.
Hey,
bummed out.
Mr. Mayor, last month when we spoke to you about this, and you've said this to virtually everybody who's asked, I'm, quote, cautiously enthused about where we're heading on the Olympics. I think I'm 99% sure you even said to us even the bidding process is good. Didn't you tell us this last month for raising the profile of the city?
Absolutely.
And that's right. Well, you know, I hate to admit that some people have better questions than I do. Let me read to you from Ivana Abraham's column, which you probably read, and see if you can answer these questions. If the USOC, United States Olympic Committee, picks Boston, we'll be well along the road to hosting an Olympics. This is in January, tentatively, by the way. Mm-hmm. A vast, complex, incredibly costly undertaking without ever having had a meaningful public conversation about it. How nuts is that? Whatever happened to that vaunted civic discourse? Now, John Fish and others, everybody who's an advocate for this says, before the USOC decides, there's going to be this major public discussion, the cost, the benefits, whatever. What's happening?
2024 has been a little slow on the one area that I think we have to do a lot better job on is notifying the public. And I will say that publicly, and I've said it publicly now. There was a public input in the very beginning of this process. There was the legislation filed that Eileen Donohue, who's a senator
from Lowell,
was pushing and working with through the legislative process. There was an early public process. Now there has to be a lot better. This has to be strengthened, tightened up, and a lot better process moving forward as far as the public goes from now. I know that the 2024 is working on something right now, probably as we speak, about having a public process.
Before the USOC?
Yes.
Where there'll be an opportunity for the public to comment on budgets?
And give their input and talk about it.
The
budget stuff can be asked and spoken about. The majority of the money that's going to be raised here for an Olympic bid, if we were chosen, let's say we were chosen to go on to the next round, it's going to be private money. You know, the public money, where the public money comes into play, is going to be infrastructure, which is going to be spent anyway, really. And some of that, I don't know if it'll be private money in the infrastructure, but it'll be public-private partnerships all over the place. But as far as the money itself, as far as building these different facilities, there will be city and state-owned land that these will be built on. But as far as paying of them, I'm not anticipating. I can speak for the city. The city will not be building stadiums. The city will be working to build infrastructure. The city will be working with the state and the federal government on transportation infrastructure. And as I said in the past, I'm not going to mortgage the future of the city away for an Olympic bid. But I do think that an Olympic bid is interesting for the city as far as promotion of our city and put us on a world stage for 3 years.
But one last thing about this, if I can, Mr. Mayor. The most recent thing I saw, and I'm sure you've seen much more, was $4.5 billion in private money, $4.5 billion in public money, but as you said, and John Fish has asserted, all that $4.5 billion of public is already in the pipeline for public transportation.
Yeah, it's in the, yeah.
Well, how do you become convinced, and I hope you want to be convinced of this, that if they go over budget, like almost all Olympics do, that the overage bill will not be presented to the city of Boston and the Commonwealth of Massachusetts? How do you guarantee that?
When working on the contracts, myself, and in this case now, Governor-elect Baker will be working on this, we'll make sure that we put in the restrictions, not the restrictions, but making sure that we have the safeguards in there that we're not picking up the tab. And I can tell you, as mayor of the city of Boston, I am not going to leave my successor somewhere down the road with an Olympic bill that's billions of dollars. I mean, our budget is $2.7 billion a year. We have very little room in that budget to overspend at all. In some cases, we have to underspend. We have to cut back. And as we're putting contracts together, we'll make sure the city is identified and protected in all these
cases. You're convinced by the date that the USOC makes its choice in January, you and the public transparently will have that guarantee that will convince you that there will be no
I made it perfectly clear to the USOC. I've made it clear to them. I've spoken to them about this, and there were some discussions around what's the obligation of a city and town as far as putting up bonds and stuff and issues like that. And I was given guarantee from them that, you know, there's no obligation. That was from the past. And when you look at the Olympics bids in the United States, the cities that's hosted it, I'm not aware of any United States city that's actually lost money on an Olympic bid or having an Olympic stadium. I mean, Olympic games in their city.
Well, they've had a lot of buildings, though, a la Atlanta, that have been ended up
leftovers.
Being white elephant kinds
yeah.
of
but,
things.
Yeah, but you also have, I think Atlanta's a little different boat than Boston, but you also had legacy in Atlanta where you had housing that was built for the Olympic athletes that was able to be spread around. University of Georgia benefited from it and was able to do it. Out in Utah, you were able to connect the mountains out there. In New York, who didn't get an Olympic bid, you were able to master plan Brooklyn, which is benefiting right now from it. And also in Chicago, Chicago didn't get the Olympic, but what they were able to do is be on a world stage for 3 years where their convention center business went up by double digits and the tourism went up. So there's a lot of benefits as well to it.
You know, one last thing for me before we get back to the calls, Mayor Walsh. Robert Campbell is the architecture critic for the Globe. It really kind of trashed the Innovation District that was just in South Boston. People don't know this is where the World Trade Center is, Seaport Boston Hotel, New Legal Seafoods and all that. It's in South Boston. He said it has all the charm of an office park in a suburb of Dallas, and the architecture there looks about as interesting as upended packing crates. And without saying so, he kind of blames it all on Mayor Menino and not planning this thing well enough. So do you think it's a big mess down there in the Innovation District?
I wouldn't say it's a mess. I definitely think we have opportunity still in the Innovation District to do some spectacular buildings down there. I was talking to somebody today, this morning, who's going to be building something down in the Innovation District. And I said to them, think outside the box. Let's start to make, when you come in off the water, and you come into Boston Harbor, you know, you see some buildings that are nice looking buildings, but nothing that's like, wow.
Yeah.
And I think we have to get some wows on the waterfront that, wow, that's really spectacular there. And I think we're going to see some of that over the course of the next few designs of the next few buildings down there.
Are you worried about being underwater soon?
No, I mean, we're preparing for that. As far as the climate change, we're doing a lot of work around the climate change, and we've done an awful lot of stuff there. The architecture is a little different now. You look at the Spalding building across the street, across the bay in Charlestown. When they built that, they built it to be resilient to Superstorm, that what's happened with Superstorm Sandy. They've done a lot of work there. The architecture now is changing. And I think that, you know, any major developer that's going to invest hundreds of millions of dollars in the waterfront, they're going to make sure that their building's going to be resilient.
Let's go back to the calls. Mayor Marty Walsh.
Thank you. How about, he's been on the phone for a long time, Kevin in Rosendale.
Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Mr. Mayor. Thanks for taking my call. Jim and Marjorie, you're great. I used to listen to you on the rap station back there.
Thank you.
Hey, Kevin. The reason I'm calling is twofold about the smoking ban. I'm personally against it, and especially the part about e-cigarettes, because it's basically water vapor going in the air. Two, I've personally seen park rangers pull cigarettes out of people's hands, and other people have witnessed this also. And I was wondering if I could, I called the Parks Department and asked them, and they told me that it wasn't the policy for them to do that, but they told me that it also wasn't, they weren't deterring them from doing that. I was wondering if I could get your word to prevent the park rangers from continuing to do this, because it's a public safety issue.
Well, let me look into that. I don't think, the park ranger has the right to pull a cigarette out of somebody's hand. The park ranger has a right to write a ticket to somebody, ask them to leave the park. They do not have the right to physically remove something out of their hand. So I'll have to look into that. When I get back, I'll check with Parks and Recreation. And Kevin, if you want to call the office, you can give us a call in City Hall. Let me follow up on that. As far as the smoking ban itself, you know, that was put into place about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. Really about the opportunity to keep our environment clean, allow people the opportunity to enjoy the park without smoking. I know as a former Little League coach, having, you know, people and parents smoke around a bench was frustrating to me back 10, 15 years ago, because you're down there for the park. So it's a tough one. I know if people want to go and have a cigar or a cigarette and walk to a park, enjoy themselves, that's fine. But that's the rules in the city today, and there's no smoking in parks in the city of Boston today.
Hey, Kevin, thank you. Make sure you call the mayor's office. You know, one last thing I was thinking of when you mentioned your discussions with the governor-elect about the Olympics. Is Baker where you are on this now, do you think?
I don't know. I mean, you'd have to ask him. I think, you know, he's probably where I was a year ago when he came in. It's like, boom, you know, all of a sudden now you'd have to do the job. So I think I haven't had many I've had conversations with Charlie Baker about stuff. We haven't gotten to a deep conversation about the Olympics. My conversations with him have been about how do we work city-state work together. Not that the Olympics are not a high priority of mine, but, you know, my priorities are making sure we continue to get local aid to the city of Boston, make sure we can get education funding to the city of Boston, make sure the programs we spoke about earlier, the detox programs get funded, things like that. That's what the priorities have been.
You know, the endless list of things you got to deal with as mayor of a major American city. You mentioned before 11 months. What's been the hardest thing to get your arms around, either to learn, to understand, to get under control? What's the thing that's been the hardest for you?
That's a good question. I get that question in so many different variations. One is the schedule, trying to get enough time to actually think about things. Really, there's not a lot of that in the office. You know, I'm up and out by, say, 7 in the morning. I'm home by 9 at night. And then from that time in between, anything can happen. You know, I think I need more time for planning and thinking about what we want to do in the city. That's one thing. I think the issue that's probably, it's not frustrating, but education. It's an issue that I want to fix today. I want it to be fixed today. And it's going to take years for us to completely turn the system around. And that frustrates me a little bit, is that, you know, we had issues with public works. We're able to make some adjustments in a 3-month period, turn it around. Inspectional services, make a few changes, turn it around. Mm-hmm. Transportation, parks, turn it around. With education, we're talking about little human beings. We're talking about adults. We're talking about a very complex department and area that we have to finally lay the groundwork down. Because what happens is you lay the groundwork down, in 3 or 4 years, people get it's not turned around quick enough that people get angry. They try to fix it again. So we need to come up with some real concrete roadmaps, and we have to stick to them and make it happen.
Okay, let's go. I'm sorry.
Do you know what any of those concrete roadmaps are at this point?
Universal pre-K is absolutely one of them. Okay. I mean, bringing in universal pre-K absolutely is one of those. And it's a proven study that if we can get our young people into school earlier at the age of 4, full day pre-kindergarten, we can make a change in their outcome in their educational. We see it. The studies are there.
You know who disagrees with you on those studies?
Who?
The new governor. He doesn't agree that the universal pre-K, we've had many discussions.
Well, he says that you get the advantage, but then you lose the advantage if you get to third or fourth grade, if the schools aren't good enough.
Well, that's the point. The point is we can't say, okay, we're not going to put universal pre-K because our third grade is underperforming. We have to, while we're doing universal pre-K, we have to fix our second, third, and fourth graders. So by the time our universal pre-Ks get to third and fourth and fifth, the system is better.
You're going to lobby him on this?
Of course.
Okay, of course. Let's go back to the Coles.
Fran from Mansfield?
Hey there, Fran. Fran? Is it something the mayor said? Fran?
I don't know.
I'm calling
go ahead, Fran.
Yeah, I'm calling in regards to the Long Island Bridge. I would like to make a suggestion.
Thanks, Fran. Good.
Okay, go ahead. Suggest that they provide a ferry to the Long Island Bridge to bring the people out there in the evening. The facilities are there. And they were providing buses before, so I think it would be a win-win situation for everyone.
Thank you, Fran.
Thanks, Fran, for that. You know, and one of the first things I thought of, Fran, as well, was the ferry service. We have a couple issues there. One is we don't have a pier strong enough to handle the ferry service in the wintertime. We'd have to get a barging system to get the supplies on and off the island, food and stuff on and off the island that we need to provide the services. And the most important thing that's concerning is medical assistance. So if somebody were in the shelter or in a detox and you know, had a heart attack or an overdose or something like that, getting them off the island safely to a hospital would be very difficult with the waterway. But I appreciate that, Fran. Something we're constantly looking at. The one thing, Camp Harborview, which is on the island, the program for the kids in the summertime, the camp, they are going to use a shelter. I mean, they are going to use a ferry service in the summertime for the kids to get them on and off the island. But great suggestion, Fran. We'd have to make some major upgrades as well if we were going to go there. But it's something that I've thought about and talked about, and would love to use that option.
Our number is 877-301-8970. The mayor is with us for another handful of moments. Let's continue with the calls, Mr. Mayor.
How about let's go to Sarah in Boston.
Hi, Sarah.
Call.
Hi.
It's thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
It's another question about the Olympics. I'm just curious when or if the people who live in the city will be given an opportunity to make or participate in any of the decision making.
Yeah, there's, I don't know if you heard, we spoke a little earlier. I know that 2024, the organization that's leading this effort is working on some stuff right now. Allowing people to be able to make comments and have conversation about this.
Well, for example, if a great percentage of the people of the city did not want the Olympics in the city, would that make a difference, or would it go forward anyway?
No, it would absolutely make a difference. And the polling numbers show that the majority of the people in the city are interested in hosting an Olympics. There's been several polls done about the Olympics, and it's very favorable towards the Olympics right now. I think the idea of not having an Olympic and having an Olympic, I'm viewing this as an opportunity for economic development and opportunity for plan. We're going to plan out the city anyway, what the city will look like in 2030. But I'm looking at it on a bigger scale, not just hosting an Olympics game here. I think the Olympics would be spread through a lot of different neighborhoods and give people a lot of opportunity. We're talking a two-week period of having the Olympics, another 2 weeks for the Paralympic Games. I just think that most of the people I've spoken to have been excited about it. I know there is a movement out there to not go for the Olympics, but I haven't seen their arguments convince me why we shouldn't have an Olympics.
Sarah, thanks for the call. I think you'll like this question a lot, Mr. Mayor. This is from Phil on Facebook. when is he, I assume that would be you, the mayor, when is he going to take bicycles seriously, order his transportation department to make infrastructure a part of, capital letters, every road project? We're tired of the lame excuse that the state dollars were there and we had to spend it, and then it ends with the capital letters L-A-M-E with three exclamation points. You want to respond to that?
Yeah, I'm actually tomorrow, I'm actually doing a bicycle ride in the morning.
Oh.
You?
Yes, I am.
Do you have a helmet?
I have a helmet. I have a bike. I'm not sure where I'm biking, but I...
Your colleague's going to tell
you. I'm actually in Brighton. I'm going to be in Brighton tomorrow. I'm doing a bike ride tomorrow. We certainly have to do more work around bikes, and we have to do more work around infrastructural bikes. Yeah, is it Phil?
Phil, yeah.
Phil's absolutely right in a lot of ways there. We have to. I don't think we've made the excuse of the state. I mean, I haven't made the excuse of the state. We have to do a lot more around bicycle safety as well, and that's why tomorrow I'm going out for a ride with some advocates.
When was the last time you were on a bicycle?
Last time, a long way?
Yeah.
It was a while.
You're nervous?
No, I can ride a bike.
You sure?
I hope. I don't think you forget how to ride a bike.
You never forget how to ride a bike. That's a great line.
You know, so, I haven't, like, tomorrow, like, they're really riding me tomorrow. So I haven't done a ride like that in quite a while.
You know, Mr. Mayor, since you are the mayor and it's Thanksgiving, your whole schedule, I would assume, has changed dramatically being the mayor of the city. What are you doing on Thanksgiving?
In the morning, I'm going to be visiting some homeless shelters. And in the afternoon, I'm going to be sitting on my mother's couch watching football.
Okay.
I hope.
Does she cook?
Yes, she does. She won't let anyone near the kitchen.
Well, that's good. Yeah. You let off the hook.
I'm sorry, go ahead. Yeah.
I'll wash the dishes afterwards.
And all the tree lighting. I remember you and Mayor Menino, after you were elected, some stuff.
Yeah, I went with, the Mayor Menino, God love him, really set the tone for these tree lightings. And, you know, as I said the other day, I think I have about 67,000 tree lightings this year. We're lighting the trees outside here in a few minutes. But the mayor really set the bar high there, and we have a lot of tree lightings on the schedule. You know something, though? One thing about the tree lightings, and I've gone to them when I was a rep in my district, and I went with the mayor last year on a lot of them.
I know you did.
It's a great way to see people, and it's a great way for people to be able to, even if you get a few minutes to chit-chat with people, you get a feel for the mood of people out there. People will tell you things that you hear that you might not hear from people on the staff in the office. They'll tell us some concerns. They'll tell you good things you're doing, bad things you're doing. And I like to hear that. I mean, it's great to hear people come up and tell you, oh, I like what you did here. I'm not really happy about that. And we'll have a chance to do that over the course of the next month. My first tree lighting is actually coming up on Saturday night. So first of many.
You know, when you said, Mr. Mayor, a second ago about, you know, people get to tell you what their thoughts are and that sort of thing. How differently do people treat you? I mean, when you're a state rep, obviously you matter in that district, but you're a state rep. You're one of 106. I'm serious about this. How differently are you treated now? I mean, I think it's fair to say you got a lot more power than you had before.
People love pictures. It's amazing. What amazes me is how tuned in the young kids are in Boston.
That's neat.
Like, when I see, like, the little guys, like, you know, 7-year-olders, 8-year-olders, like, I walk in, they know who I am, they come up talking to me, people are great. I mean, honestly, I haven't, my 11 months here, I've had a couple people angry about certain things, but for the most part, people just are very grateful when they see you out in the neighborhoods. They're very happy. People generally have a good feel in Boston, what's going on in Boston right now. They feel good. Obviously, we have concerns, bike lanes in certain neighborhoods there's problems with, and, you know, crime in certain other neighborhoods there's problems with. But for the most part, people feel really good about what's happening in the city of Boston. And I think people might not agree with every single thing I say. But for the most part, I think they like the direction the city's going in.
But the power players is where, I mean, that's really...
Seats at restaurants? Is that what you're asking?
No, power players who need, you know, developers, whatever. Do you say to yourself after they kiss your you-know-what, you go to your staff and say, do you believe that?
I have a lot of new friends today that I didn't have a year ago. But you know something? When you get down to it, what I find interesting is... as they're trying to analyze me, as you know, the guy from Dorchester who's the mayor of Boston now, I try to analyze them. How did they get to where they are? You know, so I'm sitting there always thinking, like, how did he get or she get there? But you know, it's but I'll tell you one thing too. You know, and a lot of those people we talk about, the power players, one thing that people don't realize how generous they are to the city of Boston. They really are. When you go to an event, whether it's Big Sisters, I was at the other day, or a homeless program event, or whatever it is, these same people are there. They're giving tens of thousands of dollars to different organizations. So they really, truly do give back to the community. And we're pretty fortunate here in the city to have so many great players. One guy that I'm just going to mention, I probably shouldn't want to throw his name out there, is Jack Connors.
We are big fans of Jack Connors.
You know, Jack Connors, I knew Jack a little bit. He didn't really know me before I became mayor of the city of Boston.
By the way, for those who don't, former head of Hill Holiday, former head of Partner, I mean, a big player in this
Jack
community.
Calls me once a week, doesn't ask for anything, just to check in. And the first couple of months he did it, thank you, I don't need anything. And then I started asking him questions about people and situations, and his insightfulness is incredible. And so when you get guys like Jack, who's very successful, to have a guy like that who I didn't know, who's off it, doesn't need anything. You know, there's some great people like Jack in the city that their philanthropy and their heart are big. And so I appreciate talking to Jack. And it is some other people who didn't call me back last year when I called them. I enjoy those calls, though.
I bet you do. Okay. Mr. Mayor, really appreciate your time. By the way, if you're on hold, stay on hold. We'll take your phone number. The mayor's office will call you. If you sent an email, which wasn't read,
the
mayor's office will respond to that, too.
A lot of them.
Mr. Mayor, thanks so much for your time. We appreciate it.
Thanks
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
That is the voice of Mayor Marty Walsh. He joins us every month for Ask the Mayor. Thanks again, Mr. Mayor, for coming in. Up next, Emily Rooney joins us for Open Mic and her famous list of obsessions, complaints, and observations. That's on 89.7 WGBH, Boston Public Radio.